Welcome to Dad's on the Air for a very sunny spring morning, the 30th of October 2007 here in Sydney. Welcome to everyone who's joining us from around the world via live streaming on the 2GLF website. And don't forget, you can listen to this program, www.dadsontheair.net. at your leisure if later on. An interesting show coming up. We've got James Adams, who is from he's running as the Family First member in the seat of
Wentworth. Eastern suburbs of Sydney.
Eastern suburbs of Sydney. That should be an interesting show. He's a bit of a live wire, our James. We've got Gary Hudson from the Gay and Married Men's Association, GAMMA, turning gender on its head. That should also be interesting. And we've got an interview on the Men and Boys program.
Yeah, it's a mentoring program running in country Victoria called Boys Will Be Men. That should be a great interview.
We have in the studio Ian Purdy, who's a great performer, he is.
Good morning, John.
And we've got Peter Vanderford.
Morning, John. Great to be here.
And Greg Anderson.
Morning, John. Morning, listeners.
And myself, John Stapleton. Thanks for joining us. First up, another dead soldier, an Australian soldier, has died in the name of the country. The body of Sergeant Matthew Locke has begun the long journey home. He was farewelled from Afghanistan by mates in a moving ceremony. It's very sad to see these dads being knocked off in these wars, and Sergeant Locke's sand-coloured SAS beret sat atop the flag-draped metal casket, which was carried by comrades from the Special Service Regiment's 3 Squadron onto an RAAF C-130 Hercules aircraft. The sombre ceremony was attended by Australian soldiers from Special Operations Task Group at the airstrip of the Australian base in Afghanistan's southern Augustan province. Very, very sad story. He was a father of one 33-year-old patrol commander, and he was killed close to where he won the Medal for Gallantry in June 2006 for exemplary courage under fire.
Yes, I believe he had a teenage son, left behind a teenage son.
Really
tragic
sad
stuff.
Indeed. Here in Australia, we've got an election coming on, and a lot of commentary going on about the election. It's been a Conservative government here in Australia for the last 11 years. Surprisingly, or perhaps not surprisingly, a Conservative government has not addressed or really reformed those extreme left-wing institutions, the Family Court and the Child Support Agency, which have caused so much harm and so much damage to this country. Many people believe that John Howard would put a stop to the absolute nonsense that goes on in secret, largely in secret, in these places. Unfortunately, that's not been true. I don't think the Family Court or the Child Support Agency are any better than they've ever been. A lot of other people think so, but think that there have been improvements. Bettina Arndt is one of them. Men and boys miss out in Rudd's gender agenda, she writes in the Canberra Times. Is Kevin Rudd, he's the opposition leader, interested in men? The answer sadly seems to be no. Rudd, unlike John Howard, rarely talks about issues affecting many of his own gender, such as family law, child support, fatherless families, boys' education. Indeed, this potential Prime Minister seems content to hand over the running on most social issues to female colleagues renowned for their anti-male bias. For anyone keen to ensure men and boys receive a fair go, the prospect of a Labor government is all bad news. Well, of course, the Family Court and the Child Support Agency were both creations of the Labor government. They've both done enormous harm, particularly to the working class males and their families, and enormous harm to the children of this country. They are, as far as I'm aware, as despised, dysfunctional, discredited as they have ever been. And many people who've been through or experienced these institutions regard them as fundamentally corrupt. It's unfortunate, really unfortunate, that a Conservative government has really not addressed these issues in the way they should have. While most politicians, Bettina writes, were cowed by the wave of women's rights rhetorics, Howard voiced the concern of many, suggesting it isn't our society's interest to encourage more fatherless families. He picked up on community discontent about children losing contact with fathers after divorce. He set up a bipartisan committee to look into the rebuttable presumption of joint custody where parents shared, unless good reasons precluded it, then they shared the care of their children. That's not what actually happened. We had something called shared responsibility, which is a meaningless piece of...
A crock. Yeah.
Nonsense. There have been some good outcomes in the family court which have promoted shared care, but certainly the institution as a whole has not embraced shared care, and we still see many, many appalling cases, and including a lot of cases in recent times involving serious child protection issues. This court remains as bad as it ever has been, and but the government being filled with lawyers is a major issue in this election.
But, of course, in Denmark, they have the government over there has been one of the first in the world to pass a presumption of equal shared parenting, which is to be applauded, and hopefully it will spread. So this sensible regime, the obvious solution to the problem post-divorce of presumption of equal shared parenting, this has been passed in Denmark, one of the first countries in the world, so that is great news for fathers everywhere. Okay, well... In this morning's Daily Telegraph, we have a very cheery article written by Kate Sikora entitled "Welcome to All Our New Baby Boomers." Kate writes, "Australia had a bumper crop in 2006, babies that is. There were 265,945 babies born last year, making it the second most productive year ever. But if we think it's a record, then some experts believe this year is shaping up to be even bigger as babies become the new fashion accessory. The Australian Bureau of Statistics yesterday revealed births in New South Wales had risen from 84,578 in 2001 to 87,336 last year. Australian Bureau of Statistics reveals the increase is being driven by a higher number of women aged between 30 and 39 bearing children. Professor Ian Burney, head of human geography at the University of New South Wales, said the birth rate was likely to increase for the next few years. People have been delaying birth for many reasons, but now we are seeing more women later in life having children. With advances in technology, I think it is safer for women to have children later, and also men are exercising their choice to have children later."
Okay, babies everywhere. And here's a very controversial story about a woman in northern New South Wales.
Yes, we dealt with this a few months ago, John, also in the Telegraph, and I'm quoting an article by Janet Five Yeomans, a mother who could not afford the petrol to drive her children to a court-ordered contact visit with their father should never have been jailed, the full bench of the family court has ruled.
So Australia has the most generous welfare system, or one of the most generous in the world, but she didn't have money for petrol. I don't think so.
Well, it's one of the most feeble excuses, but obviously accepted by the full bench.
Well, a father wouldn't get away with that sort of carry-on, would he?
Absolutely not. In an extraordinary judgment, the court said, not only did Federal Court Magistrate Michael Jarrett get it wrong, his considerations fell far short of what was required by the Family Law Act. So what is required? I mean, this we dealt with this a few months ago, and this woman was flatly refused to give the father any contact, and the magistrate at that time said, go outside and think about it, because you leave me no other option than to send you to jail if you refuse to give the father contact. And it was part of her order she was breaking. And the woman said, I'm not going to give the father contact. So he gave her a 4-month jail sentence. It was as simple as that.
She flatly refused, basically.
She did. Yeah. So what is... How come this reporter just picks out the issue of one contact visit, the petrol wasn't available to the mother to drive the children to a court-ordered... It was a court-ordered contact visit.
No, I wouldn't take it out on the reporter. She's an exceptionally good reporter, very highly respected, and is the only reporter that really picked up on this story. She broke this story. She's the one that's bringing it to attention, that this absolute debacle.
But there's a lot more to it, as was reported earlier, wasn't there? This question of no petrol in the car was never mentioned in a few months ago when the issue came up.
It's amazing the level of restriction that reporters are under from family law. I mean, you cannot mention the family court in almost any context to do with children. A lot of the children that suffer major abuse or even death in this country are the subject of family court orders, and reporters are by law or refuse to even mention the fact.
Secret courts.
Oh, they're secret courts. And Howard has really failed, really, really failed to reform them. He would have huge support if he'd done what he should have done. We'll be back in a moment.
Was the Spin Doctors with the Little Miss Can't Be Wrong. And on the phone now we have with us Gary Hodson. And Gary is the president of GAMMA, and that's the Gay and Married Men's Association. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good to have you on the show, Gary. We'd like to talk about some of the issues for gay dads in Australia, but why don't we just start off... would you like to tell us your personal story of coming out as a gay man and as a gay dad?
Sure, sure. I was brought up on a conservative part of Sydney in a Christian home, had no concept of homosexuality, no knowledge of it, and with that married at the age of 20. 3 years later started having children, so I have three adult daughters and we had five miscarriages. Those girls are now 28, 26 and 23. When I was about 32, I started to realise that my sexuality wasn't quite the same as other people's. I valued things differently and thought differently. By the time I was 40, I realised fairly clearly after a very long and painful process in counselling that I was gay, but couldn't discuss it with my wife, who wouldn't talk, and eventually had a nervous breakdown and tried to commit suicide. Because of my trying to commit suicide, I told someone and was outed publicly on the radio.
Wow.
That's the way my three children found out I was gay.
And I believe at that time, when you were going through that suicidal phase, you were helped out by Gamma, which is the organisation you're now working for, is that right?
That's exactly right. It was one of those situations where I was living in the country and feeling absolutely desperate, knew no one I could talk to, and someone sent me a copy of the Gay Press, a friend, and I found in that this ad for Gamma, Gay and Married Men's Association. Had no idea who they were, what they did, where they were, but they had an emergency helpline, which we still have.
So and when exactly did all this happen to you? Because you would think that with the far more enlightened approach to, you know, homosexuality these days, that that sort of thing wouldn't happen, that being outed on the radio after a suicide attempt, that's an absolutely horrific thought. When did this happen?
1997.
Right, so it was only 10 years ago.
Yep, and it does happen, mate, I can assure you.
No, I'm sure it does,
I was living on the north coast of New South Wales, which, despite the obvious conclusions you might draw, is actually a very conservative area. Very conservative values, very conservative outlook, very rednecked in terms of their approach to things different to the norm. And I worked for the church. So when you put the combination together, I was in a very conservative employment situation and social situation.
And what is your relationship like now with your three daughters?
It varies, of course, as it does with teenagers.
Yeah.
Not teenagers, young adults. But essentially it's a good, strong relationship. And I would say totally different to any relationship I had when I was married. And when I say different, I mean much better. When I was married, I felt like, well, girls, I don't understand girls, so my wife managed them. Once we were single, I had to learn to manage them, and I actually learnt that I enjoyed them. It wasn't just a matter of doing the work to care for kids, it was coming to enjoy them as well. So it's been a very different relationship for me since I've been out and single and living in Sydney.
Fantastic. Well, it's good that it's great that there's been a more or less a happy ending. And now, obviously, Gamma really saved your life. So what can you just tell us a bit about what Gamma does? That's the Gay and Married Men's Association, who you're now the president of.
I am. I've been president for 3 years, and before that I used to be a regular guest speaker. I've done that really out of thanks and recognition for the service. So we do a lot of things, but essentially we run a telephone line, which is staffed 5 nights a week by trained volunteers. We have a website that is full of information and stories of men like us. And we run support groups, which is probably for me the pivotal thing. So twice a month we meet in the evening on a Wednesday, and I run a very clear group. We meet and introduce ourselves by whatever name we choose, and it gives as much information as we want. Then I usually have a guest speaker come in who is particularly relevant. So it might be a counsellor, it might be a lawyer, it might be a social worker, it might be someone who's been down part of this journey before, it might be someone talking about how to care for kids when you're a single parent, it might be someone talking about how to care for your previous partner and your children as you come out. It might be someone presenting options of not coming out, but staying in the marriage. So I'll have a speaker, speaks for about 15, 20 minutes. Then I have a question time with the speaker. Then usually ask the speaker to leave and open the floor for questions and really encourage guys then, in privacy and absolute confidentiality, to ask the questions that they're too scared to ask and to say what it's like for them at the moment, what emotions they're feeling, what support they've got or not got, what they need, what they're scared of. And the guys are amazing. They talk so honestly and so openly, and they support one another so well. It's an absolute privilege to seeing men face their failings and their strengths and grow up. It's just amazing.
I guess a lot of them would be like you, that had gone through horrific emotional abuse at the hands of, you know, conservative redneck people, and would just, it would be like arriving in an oasis to find men who have gone through similar experiences and who've felt similar emotions.
Yeah, look, there are some certainly like me. There are others who actually come from, in a way, a more heart-rendering situation. They're still very much in love with their wife. They love their home and their children, but they've come to recognise that they're gay and they can't really, they just can no longer suppress the need to identify as who they are, to actually be honest with the people they know, to tell their children, to tell their wife, to tell their siblings and their parents, and they know that will break the marriage. Or they've already told the wife and it has broken the marriage. So you get guys there who are really desperate to still go on in relationship with their wife and their children, and they don't know how to do that.
Gary, you mentioned earlier you were a member of the church up on the North Coast.
Yes.
What's your relationship with the church now? How does the church view you? Do they accept you still in the congregations, or what's the story with
them? Not in that church, no. I've become a member of the Uniting Church, and there I am certainly accepted, but I don't feel quite as at home as I used to. But I'm certainly accepted for who I am, and my partner is always welcome. So it's a very different atmosphere.
So Gary, the guys that you were just describing, who are really going through the trauma of being with, you know, a woman that they love and a family that they love and you know, not wanting to leave them, but you know, realizing that they are gay. What are some of the fears that these men have, particularly if they're still in the closet, so to speak, when they're considering coming out to their families?
Okay, there's a list of fears, a list of things that we work through. Some of the guys are already having sex with men, and not all of them, but some. So we're very strict about they have to be having safe sex, and we need to explain what safe sex is in a gay situation. We also push them to all go and have sexual health checks regularly, and we push them to recognise that they could be putting their partner at risk. So there's a very heavy emphasis on safety for all concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we talk about integrity. So are they being honest with themselves? And if they're not, what damage that can do to their psychology and what damage it can do to their families? And their concern is usually the damage they're going to do. They're usually terrified that their kids will turn on them and never speak to them again. Their kids will hate them. Their kids will think they're a faggot or a poofter or a useless idiot or some horrible, embarrassing thing.
Mm.
They're terrified that their wife will take them to court and refuse them rights to see their children. They're terrified that the court will go against them because they're a poof and take all their property and all their means of income from them.
Has there been precedence in that issue?
Yes, there is. There's guys who... Well, that's probably a very unfair statement. There are guys who would tell that story. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't follow that story through.
Mm-hmm.
But there are guys there who come and say that they have received bias at the hands of both solicitors and the courts. I'm not in a position to say that that's true, but I certainly hear that story.
A lot of those issues that you said that they have to deal with are actually the same as with heterosexual men, but it seems with gay men that they're even more, you know, the response is stronger because of the added sexual bias.
Yes.
Heterosexual men do have to go through the same worrying about, you know, the reaction. If say they've taken a new lover, even if it is another woman, they've still got the same kind of stigma. They've still got the same worry about losing their children. They've still got the same worry about not being taken seriously by the family court, which is a feminist institution, as we all know. So it's really a matter of degree, and you can see that gay men must be driven, because most of us in here are heterosexual and we've gone through family court and various things, child support agency, but it must be even more acute for men, you know, gay men.
Yeah, I think it is. I think our stories are very similar, just with a different edge. For me, for instance, when I first was parenting my teenage daughters and they were in the puberty stage, on a number of occasions I took them to the doctor, and the doctor almost point blank told me I had to leave the consulting room because these were young women. Now, I was the sole parent caring for them at that point. I needed to know what was going on with them and what they needed. I didn't need to be watching everything he did, but I needed to at least hear and be consulted. He wouldn't talk to me because I was the father.
Well, that was because you were gay?
Yeah.
Okay, and what was his basis for that? Did he say why?
I mean, I couldn't possibly understand what was going on. I didn't need to hear.
Why would it be any different for a heterosexual? You would think that a heterosexual man would be more likely to, well, I don't know, just as likely to be inappropriate in a situation where a young lady was being examined by a doctor. I mean,
you would think so.
Yeah, you would.
I was told it was the gay issue.
Look, on a different slant, do you see prejudice amongst gay men against blokes who have children?
Yes, most definitely. Not by all of them, but certainly by the more trendy guys in the gay centres on Oxford Street, for instance.
They all think you've betrayed the cause or something.
Yes, very much so.
I've seen this in action. And is there any attempt to address all that sort of... It's funny, a group that's showing so much prejudice against them can show prejudice themselves.
Yeah, it is funny. And the action is, I'm doing things, and I'm pushing the Gamma Group to do things. I've had articles in the gay press recently talking about the fact that I'm a father and that I have children and what it's been like. I'm talking on this show. I take every chance I can to put out the fact that we are fathers and we are gay, and we love both. We love our children, and we love ourselves as we really are. It's pretty hard to address the issue. I'd like to get into the mainline press as well, but they're not too interested,
no,
as you might imagine.
Have you had much positive attention from the gay press?
I've had some great attention. Not a huge amount, but a number of really good articles, a number of really nice responses, so people pleased to hear the story and saying, oh, my cousin was like that, or yeah, they've identified part of it. So it's been quite good.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, Gary, we've run out of time. It's been absolute pleasure having you on the program. And would you like to give the contact details for Gamma before we wind up?
I'd love to. Thank you. Our office phone number, and the office line is sometimes staffed, is 9267 4000.
And that's a Sydney number, 02?
That's a Sydney number, mm-hmm. And there's an answering service there. And then the state number is 1800... 804-617, 1-800-804-617. And that's, again, got an answering service, but we try to have that staffed every week, night, evening from 6 till 10. And our website is www.gamma.org.au.
Fantastic. Gary, all the best, and keep up the good work. And once again, it's been a pleasure having you on Dad's on the Air this morning.
Thank you, Craig. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Just
we have on the line James Adams from Fathers for Equality. Welcome to the show, James.
Good morning, dads around the country and other family supporters. How are you all going?
We're good. Lovely spring morning. Now, you're running for Family First in the seat of Wentworth, I understand.
Exactly, with 0% chance of getting elected. But that's...
Oh, I don't know. People are fed up with everybody else, aren't they?
Oh, John, I only wish.
We'll all vote for you, mate.
But if I were to get elected, it'd be only on the way that Olympic ice skater won the Olympics by everyone else being knocked out of the race.
You can only hope.
Well, you never know.
You never know. Yes, you could beat Labour and the Libs. What on the point?
Small party. Anyway, yes.
Look, do you think I'm right in thinking that John Howard would be 3 or 4 percentage points ahead if he'd done the right thing by family law and separated parents and been more decisive about it instead of the wishy-washy reforms that he did introduce?
All I can say is at least he introduced some reforms. There was, the onslaught of the nasties has been... Perhaps, the nasty feminists has been slowed. We're still getting men convicted on the assumption of guilt until proven innocent and so on. We're still having children robbed from their fathers. We're still having vast numbers of children being killed and abused and so on because they don't have their natural fathers to protect them. Look at the boy in the suitcase found floating in a pond recently. What was that about?
Little Dean Shillingsworth.
Little kid living with mum and mummy's new boyfriend. If you look at the stats, children who miss out on their natural father are abused or neglected or murdered or sexually abused 8,000% more often than children that have both their natural parents.
Will you be talking about those issues
Yeah, well, going to have to try and keep the message as simple as possible.
Yes.
I'd start by saying, look, I have 0% chance of getting elected. But what I and others who are running for the Equal Parenting Non-Custodial Parents Party and Ed Dubofsky in Western Australia are doing are trying to create some votes to prove that we have some votes and that this is an issue that is close to the heart of every parent who loves their children. Children need the protection of both their parents. I'm doing this in Wentworth, for several reasons. Malcolm Turnbull's our future Prime Minister at some stage. Getting introduced to him through this process, I think, is going to be very powerful for our movement in a few years' time.
Well, Turnbull may well be the future PM, but he's got to hold his own seat first, isn't he?
I think that's going to be okay. Anyway, but at the end of the day, the other thing about this election is... Really, it probably comes down to who holds the balance of power in the Senate. And the thing that really worries me and a lot of other people is if the nasty feminists, if the Greens hold the balance of power in the Senate, we can expect the horse trading that goes on to see all the good work, tiny, tiny steps though they are, reversed, and a whole new draconian all men are bastards process restarting. Well-funded and ideologically driven. I remember listening to the Senate where the Greens and the Democrats and the ALP left one after another when the new Family Law Act were being debated, said, it's okay to lie. It's okay for a woman to lie in court. Women should have the right to lie in court, under oath, in the divorce court. And I can send you the quotes. It's unbelievable.
No, that's
one
ridiculous.
Another,
that's horrible.
It's okay for a woman to lie in court. There should be no possibility of fining or charging or any punishment for a woman lying under oath in court.
James, Malcolm hasn't got a great majority in his seat, has he?
That's a simplification. Last election, he was running against the previous Liberal member. There was a pre-selection battle. The previous Liberal member lost. Malcolm Turnbull became an endorsed member, which basically meant, and then the previous member stood as an independent against Malcolm Turnbull.
There was lots of blood on the floor.
There's lots of blood. It basically means the Liberal vote was split between the previous member who's running as an independent and Malcolm Turnbull, who's running as an independent, running as the endorsed Liberal candidate. This time the previously Liberal independent's not running. And
look, just in a broad brush stroke, this makes no sense to anybody listening from overseas who are not very familiar with our local politics.
True.
Just from a very broad brush point of view, why did a Conservative government not dissemble or pull apart these appalling left-wing institutions?
Because there's money in it.
Because there's billions and billions of dollars tied up.
Billions of dollars funding professional nasty feminists around the country. And that's one of the things that's so obvious. The Fatherhood and Families movement has about two staff in the country, whereas everywhere you look, there's professional feminists from EEO offices working in public sector in every government department, women's libraries. I walk past two women's libraries every day. Two women's libraries. Now, each of them must have at least half a dozen staff. They're all professional feminists, and they all just work at hurting...
bashing up men.
Basically, yeah.
And there's your women's health centres, and then there's your women's studies academics, and you name it.
Anyway,
they accuse us of running a manocentric maleocracy.
Yeah. Now, what this election, as I said, is about, I'm supporting Family First because I want to give Family First a reward for endorsing and supporting and proposing and voting for a presumption of equal time. And they're the only party that have actually been able to put up a proposal, an amendment for an assumption of equal time.
So, James, where's the Family First preferences going to go?
Family First preferences, are, there's a whole lot of horse trading between the minor parties. At the end of the day, they will virtually all go to the Liberals, but via non-custodial equal parents party and vice versa. Christian Democrats as well, who, although not having a Senate seat, also have an explicit policy of supporting a presumption of equal time and, of course, opposing the, you know, trying to undo some of the incentives that have been built in the system for divorce and singleness.
And just to sum up, how bad has the Howard government's failures in these areas been?
I'm not going to say a bad thing about Howard. All I'm going to say is that he did a whole lot less than he could have.
He most certainly
did. And that's what we're doing now, is to put some meat on the table. Now, what we've got to do in the next month, and this is the really inspiring thing, is to show, you know, in this ritual every 4 years, to show the parliamentarians that we mean votes. That dads and children mean votes.
Yes, and I reckon there'd be a million or so votes for Howard and for Johnny if he'd done the right thing instead of sitting on the fence and being cut in half.
Can I ask everyone in Australia to sign one of the petitions that we've got going? You can look at them at www.fathersforfamilies.org.au. Now that's FATHERS.
Fathers for
four
families.
With a 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, yeah.
Families.org.au. We're running four campaigns, one about supporting marriage and one about boys' education and then one about men's health and suicide to link in with Movember, and, of course, a child's right to both their natural parents.
And the final words?
And the final word is, the second last word, if anyone lives anywhere near the eastern suburbs of Sydney, I would really appreciate as much help as possible. I've got to do a lot of letterboxing. I want to put some issues on the agenda. That's the main thing about Wentworth. Everyone watches it. It's one of the bellwether electorates. If I get messages out, it means it'll get into the media for the first time.
We wish you good luck, James, from all of us here.
Thank you. Send me a message via the Fathers for Families website and I'll be jumping down your throat and wanting your help and loving it, because it's all about supporting families. It's all about the presumption of equal time. The Equal Parenting Party, good on them. Ed Dvorsky in the Western Australia running as an independent, good on him. And Family First, good on them.
That was James Adams from Fathers for Equality, who's running
Fathers for Families.
And Fathers for Families. So many organisations.
And
many
Family hats. First.
So many and hats. Family First. Yeah.
All those hats on your head, James. How do you hold them all up?
Look, it's like Diet Coke and Classic Coke. It's just different brands to the same group.
All right, well, you're doing a great job. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, that was James Adams. He's been around for 2 or 3 years and done more than most people do in decades. He's a very active, very lively character and been a great contributor and a regular guest on To Dad's on the Air. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In July, I went to the 5th biennial Working with Boys Building Fine Men conference at the University of Newcastle. One of the outstanding presentations there was by Paul Damon and Damien Litchfield, and they run the Boys Will Be Men program for Anglicare in Lilydale in country Victoria. Boys Will Be Men is a school-based mentoring and adventure therapy program for boys aged 9 to 12 years who will benefit from an adult male focus. And it promotes positive social skills, it develops the ability to manage intense emotions, and helps in improving the boys' self-esteem. It's designed to assist the boys in their transition from primary to secondary school and from boyhood to manhood. The program brings together men from the community who volunteer their time to be positive and non-judgmental role models for a number of boys in a weekly program. By building relationships and sharing activities and personal stories, these men provide reference points for the boys as they travel their own path to manhood. So here's the interview I did with Paul and Damien at the conference. So with me I've got Paul Damon and Damien Litchfield. They run the Boys Will Be Men program with Anglicare in Lilydale in country Victoria. Can you give our listeners first of all a brief overview of the Boys Will Be Men program, what you guys do?
Yep, sure. It's a 10-week mentoring program for boys aged 9 to 12 years old, school-based program. We ask men to join the program, and it's the men work with us for in the first 4 weeks. And then in week 5, the boys join us. So there's a lot of work with the men, and I guess that's the strength of the program, is that we have much more contact time with the men. So, you know, it's a mentoring program, so it's all about the mentors and helping them out. Then they're feeling pretty good about what they do because they're helping the boys, but they get a lot back from it because they're giving. Anything to add there, Damo?
Yeah, I guess the idea was to sort of identify these boys that had particular needs and pair them with men from the community that could support them and to make that sort of a sustained change in the community, that those boys will be exposed and seeing those men around the community, so there'll be that ongoing sort of mentoring within the community beyond the school environment itself. So it's kind of a very broad program. And
So there obviously there must have been some needs that you identified in the community to create a program like this. What were the needs you sort of identified with? Was it young boys who were sort of in danger of sort of going off the rails, or what were the needs that made you start up this program?
The school-based program, which became of that, the Boys Will Be Men, the criteria were different for the boys. They hadn't all come through referrals through Anglicare. They were identified by the school as lacking in social competencies or poor behaviour at school.
Poor positive male role models,
yeah.
And whether they're connected into the community. So if they're not, you know, they're not part of a club, scouts or football club, so a bit disengaged, and their behaviour as well. And and also we do have a referral form that helps us select the boys and also guides the selection process and gives us a better understanding of the boys' needs.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long's the program been running?
The Boys Will Be Men program, the school-based program, received funding from Local Answers, mm-hmm. which is a government, federal government funding, in 2005. So that's when Paul and I started with Anglicare. And at that point, the program then was taken to these two primary schools. Yeah, we're really on the outskirts of Melbourne, Lilydale, sort of on the fringe, and then the two primary schools that we work with are Warrialik and Healesville Primary School, which are semi-rural, really. They're surrounded mm-hmm. by vineyards and quite a bit of farmland. And
that semi-rural area, it's what is it? Well-off? Is it low socioeconomic? Is it a mixed sort of area in terms of the backgrounds that these kids are coming from?
Yeah, it is mixed. Like Healesville itself, it's... Yeah, there's quite a lot of vineyards, so there is a bit of money there, but traditionally it was a logging community, and Warrialik is quite a long way out there and fairly low socioeconomic and relatively high notifications to child protection and domestic violence reports to the police. The primary schools themselves generally from a lower socioeconomic background.
So you talked a bit about the selection process for choosing which boys take part. This is actually taking part through the schools, right? The schools have a set of criteria by which they identify the boys.
Yeah, we've been working closely with welfare teachers at the school, and the principal and the welfare teacher and all the other teachers will, you know, just have a look at their class and see which boys are playing up, and also have a look at the family situation of the boys and which ones don't have a positive male role model and all the other reasons too. So
the whole school's aware of the program and sort of looking out for
pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's from we work with the principal of the school,
right?
And he or she will you know, get the teachers on board. And as you know, there's not many male teachers at schools either, so predominantly female teachers that we're working with. And we have got one male teacher that's joined the program, which has been a great help to him. It's helped him a lot with his relationship with the boys too at the school, because before the program started, he was known as the RE teacher. And now, since he's done the program, he's known as the bloke that can kick the footy pretty well, and he's a nice guy. You know, so it's made a big shift right. with his ability to engage with the boys at the school.
Yeah. And what's the process for choosing the men, the volunteers that take part?
Well, we have a constant sort of volunteer drive, I guess, trying to attract volunteer men to the community.
And yeah, I saw you had some posters at your presentation.
Yeah, we've got quite a few posters that, I guess, pictorially capture what the essence of our program is, and it's about celebrating the diverse pathways to manhood, and also that the sense that, you know, we're trying to help these boys connect with themselves and connect with other people and connect with their environment and the people around them. So we're hoping that those posters will help to attract people. We also have newspaper articles that we put out.
Mm-hmm.
Community events, will often set up a stall and just provide information, and we'll speak at different other schools or other events in the community. Word of mouth is a good way. We often sort of will meet somebody in the street and tell them what we do, and a lot of people get quite inspired and have a bit of time and might not want to sort of get involved in a sporting club, but feel this is a way that they can be active in the community or CFA or Rotary or other sort of community-based volunteer opportunities aren't really for them, and this is something they're passionate about. It's a great. And then there's obviously a process of screening those men to make sure that they're suitable and appropriate to be in this sort of program with the nature of the relationships with the boys and the other men.
Do you find that men who've taken part in it will often spread that with word of mouth to other mates? Like, well, men often come up saying, you know, my mate's doing it and I heard about it, and well, is that one way that...
That's often the case, because the men, once they're involved, but before I tell you about that, another important way to try and get men on board is we encourage the boys to have a personal invite, because I guess having their father on the program would be the ultimate thing that we'd like to have, but also they can invite an uncle or just a significant male friend, and so for the boys to be able to do that, and that also helps bring that positive experiences that the boy has had back into his everyday life, so it really helps the boy develop in that regard. So, sorry, what was your question before?
Oh, yeah, about men who volunteered, referring to other men or friends or colleagues.
Yeah, and that works pretty well too, because I think the men have enjoyed the program a lot, and they get a lot out of it themselves. As you know, when you give, you receive. So it's a good thing, and that sort of just spreads out to some friends. We've had a few mates come along, particularly mates of Damien's.
We'll be back with more of Paul and Damien after this short break.
You could die. make it so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. They'll be so lonely, they could die.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
I'm at the Working With Boys Building Fine Men conference at the University of Newcastle, and I'm talking about the Boys Will Be Men program.
You say there's, you actually spend a lot more time with the men than you do with the boys. Mm. So obviously the men themselves get a lot out of a program like this. What are some of the things that you find that the men, the volunteers, get out of the program? Besides the fact that they get a lot out of it in helping the boys, but what do they get out of it for themselves in terms of, is there any sort of self-development that takes place in the men that take part?
Yeah, look, there's actually a fair bit, because the first 4 weeks of the program is men only, and we'll have we'll be exploring concepts of masculinity and with questions to the men, such as when did you first think of yourself as a man, and what's good about being a man, and all these particular questions about masculinity. And I don't think not many men these days will sit around in a group and discuss these certain questions that are, you know, are good to explore, because it takes us back and, okay, what is good about being a man, and when did I first think of myself as a man? And we also encourage the men to reflect back on their childhood, and what was the journey like for them, and who could they look up to, and who could they be themselves with, and who do they feel safe with, and all those sorts of questions. So it's a very healthy sort of experience for the men, and because we're all sharing in this environment, it's a very safe environment, so the men can come into the group knowing that we're all sharing and feeling good about what we're doing, and they can do it like it is very healthy for the men to do this, but they're also focusing on the needs of the boys.
Right.
So they're getting a lot out of it without the stigma of, oh, I'm coming in to get some counselling, or, you know, I want to talk about this issue. They can come in walking tall saying, I'm getting a lot of professional development this, but it's for the boys.
Right.
You know, so
right.
It's a safe, very safe in that regard.
And there's I think there's also a lot of healing that takes place. Like these men, some of them don't have sons of their own, and have often, when we ask them those questions, to consider what their sort of childhood and that stage of their life was like, they've often got lots of ways that they would have liked things to be differently. So they have an opportunity to explore that and sort of consider it, and then sort of put it into practice and offer that to these boys within sort of the culture of the group. And after the first night of these men's groups, which are the first 4 weeks, as Paul said, are men only, the men are asked to consider what they'll go home and share with a partner or a friend about what the group was like, and often they, you know, they share very honestly, and I guess the culture of the group and the safety of the group enables that to take place, and the men will say, oh, you know, initially I was a bit anxious or a bit concerned about hanging out with a bunch of blokes, and what are we doing just hanging out as a bunch of blokes when, you know, I thought this was about the boys. And but they really, at the end of the 4 weeks and even further down into the program, they're so grateful for that time that they've had to explore and learn about themselves, and I think it opens their awareness to other opportunities out there, and opens their ability to communicate and share of themselves, and the honesty that the support in the group is pretty amazing.
Mm. Actually, it is an amazing bond, because the men are sharing things about themselves and each other that they don't share with the good mates. So we're getting to know each other on good intimate terms, and that's really strengthens the group.
Mm.
Yeah, and that starts to develop the strength of the group. Showing this strong, healthy group in front of the boys is a very good outcome for the program, because then the men are looking after themselves, they're being honest with each other, we encourage self-care, so if the program's getting a bit too intense, and we encourage the men to sit back, get out, move out of the situation, have a cup of coffee, so that's managing themselves, and the boys are observing this group of men, and that's the pathways to manhood, and each of the men is showing, I guess, like different reference points to manhood that the boys can draw from, and that's a good outcome for the program as well.
You mentioned in your presentation also that the men often looking out for each other in the context of the camps as well. And you always have two men whenever there's, you know, so you never have a man and a child going off alone for safety issues and stuff. But the men really step up to that role and almost automatically take on those challenges.
Mm. I mean, we really yeah, encourage the men to, I mean, it's okay to ask for help, and we're really trying to model that to the boys and say, because I think that's something that men sometimes struggle with. We've got it built into us that we've got to do things ourselves and we just slog on relentlessly, but we really support the men, and the men support each other. When I say we, it's the whole group supporting each other to really, it's okay to ask for help, and if, as Paul said, if it's getting too intense or and that safety issue, yeah, always at times on camps when there's a group of boys wanting to go for a fish, two men will accompany them, and that's safety for everybody, you know, first aid safety and just security for the group. So it just maintains that safe environment.
Fantastic. So tell us a bit about the adventure camps that the men and boys go on. Just what sort of things do you take them out bush?
Yeah, it's a 3-day camp, and it's another day off of school from the boys. They love that, and it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I guess we've first set up looking after the primary needs of the boys. So there's plenty of food. Some of that may have been a problem at home. There may not have been a lot of food, but we provide all the equipment, good sleeping bags, and plenty of food. We even take the kitchen sink out. So it's a real good, healthy environment for the boys, very safe. And I guess at that stage, then once they're feeling safe and secure and have this sense of belonging, then we can challenge the boys in that supportive environment. So that sense of belonging, challenge, supportive environment, they work very well together to help the boys meeting their challenges. And the typical day, a typical camp would be, you know, Friday set up and go for a long, hard bush walk. Once we've set up, and then play some games around the campfire, and then Saturday we'll have the outdoor ed component. We'll get an instructor in, and it might be abseiling or whitewater rafting or mountain biking, and then some more activities at night, and we'll have Uncle Roy come in. Damo, if you want to share about Uncle Roy.
Yeah, Uncle Roy's an Indigenous elder from the local area where we spend our time camping, and he comes and shares of himself about, you know, traditional foods that his people would have eaten in that local area. And it really, he also welcomes us to that land and has a smoking ceremony with the boys. And so that it's the boys give him an enormous amount of respect and really honour that time, and that's part of what we're trying to achieve as a program, is to sort of give the boys a sense of understanding of where other people are at and how they fit into that bigger picture of their world and their social network and their environment, and it sort of all links back in together.
Do you find the boys respond to the sense of ritual in that traditional sort of smoking ceremony and all of that?
Yeah, it's remarkable. Uncle Roy, you know, Damien and I and some of the men, we're just trying to engage with the boys and get them to listen and, you know, and have a good time and all that. And that's a struggle because I just want to have fun and muck around and you know, be boys, which is very natural. But if only I could have Uncle Roy's magic, because when he's talking, the boys just listen. It's wonderful. He just stands there, Uncle Roy, and he tells us about. And I guess that's just, they're very interested. One really strong thing or aspect of the program that stood out for me is the boys will comment on what was the highlight of their program, and you know, it was when Uncle Roy showed me how to get grubs out of a tree, and that was a 5-minute interaction with Uncle Roy that this boy had, whereas we're doing at whitewater rafting, abseiling, challenge ropes day, bushwalks, caving, camp, you know, tents. But it really came down to 5 minutes of a man, Uncle Roy, engaged with this boy and showing him something that was really cool and practical. But it's just that conversation, man to boy, that was a highlight, you know, and that happens quite often.
And the camp also achieves a number of other things. Like, a lot of these boys have quite low belief in their abilities to achieve certain things, and so the sort of, we do these big bushwalks, and often on the first day, on the Friday, the boys will, there's got all this negative self-talk about, oh, we can't do this, oh no, we're not good on that, oh. And with the support of the rest of the group and the encouragement of the men, and it's amazing that by day 3 of the camp they're achieving these things, and they're starting to turn their story around and believe in themselves, and it's a real positive thing for them to take back to their families and back to the community and back to the school. And you can see their body language and everything about them change over the course of the camp. And I guess that's a big part of the camp, because we spend a significant amount of time with the boys. Like, the weekly groups leading up to them are an hour and a half each, but then we spend three whole days together. So in a safe environment, challenging them to get out of their comfort zones and take some safe risks and put themselves out there a bit
And achieve some things that maybe they thought they couldn't achieve.
But then we try and transfer that back into their everyday lives, and that, you know, to meet challenges you might need support or you will need support, so it's okay to ask for help. And that's the theme throughout the entire camp as well, that it's good to ask for help and we all need support.
We'll be back shortly. Talking with Paul Damon and Damien Litchfield about the Boys Will Be Men program that runs in Lilydale, Country Victoria.
So tell me a bit about the celebration events that take part after the adventure camp, which involve the school and the boys' families, is that right?
Yeah. So on the last, immediately after the camp, the Tuesday after that, we meet every Tuesday, is a debrief of just the men. We just review the camp and see how we've gone. The following week after, the boys return and join us, and that's the week that we have a big celebration. We have a feast and sit down and have a meal of pizza.
Is that at the school?
That's at the school. Yeah. Mm. And that's in the evening, at normal group time. Our groups are in the evening from 7 till 8:30. And the parents are invited to join, so that's an opportunity for us to transfer the learning and the understanding of what we've got from the boys over that three-day weekend back to the family and recognise their achievements. And that's, it is a great celebration. And the men all buddy up individually with the boys on the camp, and that's just when we're on bushwalks and that, the men and boys support each other, but the men feed back to the boys on that celebration night their reflections about what they've seen the boys achieve, and it's a really positive thing for the parents to hear those stories, which they may not be seen. They might have a different story about their son and his behaviour at home, or the reports he gets back via a teacher. And we really focus on the strengths of the boys while they're in the program. And once they're out of the program, we really try to see whatever strengths we can. And
And on that night, the boys get a photo album, so they can actually see what they've done, what they've achieved, and who was there with them, all about the journey. And as Damien said, the men will hand the photo album over to the boys, then give the boys a positive affirmation in front of the parents. So it's taking it back into the family system with the album. And the boy has the opportunity to reflect on that album any time, just to give him a bit of a lift. But with another celebration, we'll have it at the school for a lunchtime too. So that's the parents, family, men celebration. Then we'll have another celebration at the school, which might be a few weeks later, the following term even. And that's where we'll get the parents are invited to that one as well, and the men. But this time the teachers as well from the classroom. So, and we hand out certificates. So now it's the time for the school system to hear these positive stories about the boys, the teachers that teaching the boys, and so spreading the positive stories to the boys, other parts of the boys' lives, which is what the boys need, to keep this strength, keep it alive.
One of the problems I would envisage with the program like yours might be that the boys come and they do your fantastic course, and they might, once they're back in their normal environments, they may start to revert back to some of the low self-esteem and that sort of thing, because often their problems may have come from the environment they're in. So you've got this program called the Buddies Program. Is the idea with that to somehow sustain this and keep this as an ongoing thing for the boys, so that they don't revert back to the way they were?
That's the goal of the Buddies Program. And the Buddies Program's, it's almost two programs in one. There's a group element of it, like we organise group activities where the men and boys will get together and have lunch together and go and do an activity. It might be indoor rock climbing or mini golf. We've also taken a group of the Buddies boys, which is a mix of boys from different programs, so the age range varies even more. It might be sort of 10 or 11 to sort of 13 or 14 or even up to 15, but that's the length of the program so far. But hopefully as the years go by, we'll have boys that are in their teens, and we'll adapt the program to suit and arrange activities for older groups. But there's also the one-on-one mentoring component of that too, that we provide additional training to our men to be one-on-one mentors with the boys, and they can organise their own activities. They might share an interest in going to the footy or going fishing, and it's during those times of spending time doing something, it's that commitment of time that we ask of the men that's really important for these boys, and something that they often lack. And it's just that those couple of hours once a week, and the sideways chatter that happens while you're dangling a line in the water or kicking the footy or going sitting there watching your favourite team play, and the conversations that happen around that or that are really important, and where the relationships really strengthen and the boys can open up and share of their own struggles, and the men can share their own personal life stories, and that learning can occur. And
And are the boys encouraged to contact their buddy if they get into strife or they just need someone to chat to? Are they encouraged to keep in touch with their buddy as that sort of support mechanism for them?
We encourage the boys to maintain contact, and a lot of that happens within the group context, and a lot of it we support the men throughout the program. We're all, one thing that we find difficult is we have a great retention of our male volunteers. Like, a lot of them stay with the program for many years. Some of them come in for a program while their son's on it and may join us again for another program later. But in terms of ongoing commitment, we're still trying to source as many volunteer men as we can, so we can buddy up on a one-on-one basis as many men and boys as possible to provide that ongoing support. So presently it's mostly the boys with the highest needs that are receiving that extra support.
We were very fortunate enough to have a buddy on the program, and William and Ash came up to the conference yesterday, and they just had a wonderful day together today. They didn't go to the conference today, but William and Ash were at Newcastle all day. So and they're just building a relationship. They were telling us that they were going to go 10-pin bowling and check out a movie and go for a walk. So that's the future of the program, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, I hear your funding's actually going to run out next year. Are you hopeful that your funding will be renewed? Are you hoping to make this an ongoing thing once your funding runs out?
Yes. The program was running before we received this funding. The funding we received enabled us to run these additional programs within the school, which has been a huge success. And unfortunately, it's unlikely that we'll be refunded through the same body, and we have been sort of looking at sustainability plans for the future, which involve maybe partnering up with other schools. But yeah, we're always, I mean, the program's always evolving. We're always trying to find new ways of sourcing funding and improving the program to meet the needs of the community and the boys that we're working with. So yeah, we're very hopeful that something will come about.
Yeah. And all right. Well, Paul, Damien, thank you so much for being on Dads on the Air.
Great to be here.
And all the best with the program. Sounds fantastic, and hopefully it'll continue in some form long into the future.
Mm. Thanks, Greg. And it sounds like your radio show is offering a good support to men in the community, and it's a really positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we hope so. I'll put contact details for Paul and Damien on our website. So if any listeners to the show want to get in touch with you guys, would you be happy?
Any queries about the program?
Queries or offers of funding support?
Always.
Okay, thanks guys.
Thanks, Greg.
If you'd like to get in touch with Paul or Damien, Paul's email address is paul.damon, and that's spelled D-A-Y-M-A-N, @ anglicarevic, all one word, .org.au. And Damien's email address is damien.litchfield, that's spelled L-I-T-C-H-F-I-E-L-D, @ anglicarevic.org.au. Or you can phone them on 03-9735-4188.
Mark Young from the Mackay Loan Fathers Association, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thank you.
I believe you've been doing some research into the child support scheme at the moment, the child allowance that you have to pay. Would you like to tell us what you've found?
Yeah, the reform that the child support agency that they put up in a fact sheet. Now, I believe that they are misleading the Australian public.
Okay, so this is the fact sheet entitled Reforming Australian Child Support Scheme. That's July 2006. That's the fact sheet we're talking about?
That's correct, yeah. It's fact sheet 3 of their what they put out to the public.
Yep, and what have you found? You think there's something wrong with the cap?
There is. Where it states in the fact sheet, it's in the interim, the amount of income above, which is no additional to the child support that's payable with, will be reduced from $139,347 to $104,702. High-income earners will still pay a substantial amount of child support. For example, a non-resident parent with earnings of a greater than the new cap with the lower level of contact.
Okay. So where are they misleading us?
It was under the understanding of child support that this cap would stay in place until July 1st, 2008. But what they've done, they've put new legislation in, which they've used as guide. And this guide was, it stated, it was issued on the 1st of January 2007. This means they've implemented new legislation that overrides that legislation they had put in first off in July 2006.
Okay, so they've basically gone back on their initial commitment.
That's correct. They've they turned around and said that they don't want to have a fairer system in place, so they put this cap in place.
So what's the new cap?
Well, the cap is it goes up every financial year. At the present time, it's $109,000.
And they'd said that it was going to be capped at $104,000.
That's correct. So what they've done, they've put new legislation to override this legislation now that they had put in place originally to ensure that there was to be a fairer system.
And I believe you've gone and spoken to Diane Kelly, who's the federal member for Dawson.
Yeah, I spoke to Diane Kelly's office last Friday in relation to this matter, and I've spoken to Senator Chris Allison's office, and they informed me that the fact sheet they had in front of them didn't have a figure, but this clearly states there's a figure that it was to be capped at $104,000. As Mackay is a mining industry and it's all high-income earners, where your basically income is between $100,000 to $120,000.
So obviously it affects you directly.
Well, it does, and also the other people that's paying child support in this area, because I have one bloke here, he was paying $800 a week in child support.
Wow, that's a lot of money in child support, isn't it?
That's correct, and what it was stated to us that it was to three lone fathers, that there was to be a fairer system in place, and that we've been putting these new reforms in place, stating that two people that that there is a cap there, and most people thought, yep, there was a cap. And people only realising now is after they're getting their tax done, they're finding out that their cap has gone up from $104,000 to $109,000. So it's increased their child support even more.
In that case, you've been misleading them by giving the advice that the government gave you to pass on. You've been actually misleading your clients of the Lone Fathers Association.
That's correct, because we, under the understanding that this is the first time I've seen the guide, it's only because that in my own case, and when I went down to the child support agency, they said, oh, there's a guide. And I said, what guide? And then at the end of the day, they printed out this guide, and it shows that the cap goes up to $109,000.
How can they get away with that? I mean, that's, you know, if they've got documentation saying it's $104,000, then suddenly you go along and you do your tax, you find, I mean, that's just complete and utter outright dishonesty.
Well, that's correct. That's why I believe that they're misleading the Australian public. One minute they're telling them that we're reforming this new system, and making an affair system for both parties.
Yeah, they've been bleating that for ever since the new reforms came in.
It's basically they put the legislation in, and then they put new legislation that overrides that legislation. So really, there's no change at all what they're doing.
Okay, so this is the Howard government basically misleading people and getting you as a representative of the Lone Fathers Association in Mackay branch. You're basically being their henchman and passing on their shonky information.
Well, in the end of the day, that's why I said to him, I said, if you're going to put information up, it's got to be correct information that we're giving these people.
Absolutely. People come to you for advice, and they expect that the advice that you're going, that they can rely on it, especially when it's to do with finances and payments for their children, you would expect that you could rely on the advice that you would give them. So it is a direct attack on your credibility as well.
Well, that's correct, because in the end of the day, that people look up to us, and so, right, we're an organisation trying to help these people. Matt Miller had stated that we are listening. Well,
Matt Miller, he's the head of the Child Support Agency in Canberra, yep.
That's correct, and I'm asking Matt Miller, if they're listening, well, to come up to Mackay, and I'm inviting him to come up to Mackay, plus Senator Ellison to come up and have a listen to what's really happening in this area.
Yep, see what's actually happening on the ground with real people and real families and real situations and real case studies rather than the theoretical bureaucratic garbage they've got going on down in Canberra. And you also had said that the family court judge had specific words to you about, you know, basically going out and having more children and forgetting about your children. I remember you telling me.
That's correct, yeah. Well, I had a family court judge state that, and that was to forget about my child and move on with my life and get remarried and have more children. Well, I can't understand, well, how can I get remarried and have more children when I can't live myself?
Okay, now, this is a pretty open and shut case. Well, Mark Young from Mackay Lone Fathers, thanks for coming on Dad's on the Air, and thanks for pointing out that discrepancy that a lot of people who aren't on that kind of money would probably never, ever become aware of, the fact that the government is basically misleading people.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's on the country's despised child support system, which John Howard was meant to reform and which many people doubt has been truly reformed. We estimate here at Dad's on the Air that more than 50,000 clients of the Child Support Agency have died since John Howard came to power, and we believe that those annual death toll of the Child Support Agency should be published and all those deaths should be investigated. You can pay very easily 47% tax in this country plus 36% childcare. You can pay well over 80% of your income in tax and child support. That is an outrage which has not been fixed. There's been a case here, which we mentioned earlier in the show, of a woman who was jailed for refusing the father access to the children, to two children. And this has been overturned by the full bench of the court. So all those that think that the family court has seen the light of day and finally reformed its appalling practices, here we go.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, this woman wasn't just refusing contact with because of a lack of petrol in the car. She was given the choice by the judge to come to the conclusion that she had to abide by the court orders, basically, and she blankly refused. And
on more than one occasion, she had consistently, a number of times over the years, said to the judge, "I'm not going to let my kids see their dad," and she flouted the orders consistently.
That's right. And the judges said that they considered that the magistrate got it very much wrong. His consideration fell far short of what was required by the Family Law Act. So what is required? You know, she blatantly said, "I am not giving the father contact." And the judge said, "Well, you give me no option but to jail you." And with that ringing in her ears, she refused to give the father contact.
Then she went to jail, and then, of course, the High Court overturned the whole thing and let her out and basically said, "Your contempt of court is perfectly acceptable in the family court."
One of the things that's amazing is she managed to get this as a self-represented litigant to get it before the full bench of the court almost immediately. You can spend years trying to get a case before the full bench of the court. It went straight to the full bench of the court, and they promptly overturned it.
The power of motherhood.
And this was being cited as a case that the court had finally started to act fairly and equally towards mums and dads.
Now, in the paper, it actually mentions the judges, so we can name them. They were Justice Mary Finn, Justice Bernard Warnick, and Justice Jennifer Boland. Two out of three were women, by the way, but if that's equality in law, well, then I'm a monkey's uncle.
It's just been unbelievable the way Howard has failed to reform this institution. I think it's really broadly accepted that the use of psychiatrists, particularly in the notorious family reports in the court, are an absolute disgrace. It's been a really unfortunate aspect, I think, of a conservative Howard government that he's not really tackled these institutions or reformed them. I think that's the general view, although there are some fathers' groups who think they've done a reasonable job.
By the way, that father actually ended up with, after being given full custody of the child and the mother being sent to jail, the father ended up 6 hours contact with his kids a month.
6 hours a month. And the court seems to think that's fine.
Mm.
And the chances of her complying with that 6 hours a month for what?
Well, what's the point of having a family court if it doesn't have any teeth? If the family court just says, well, actually, we'd like you to do this, but we don't really care if you don't, and you just do what you like anyway. That's the message they're giving. What's the point of having the court? Let's save all of these multi-billions of dollars, abolish the court, and just have a poster up in every suburb saying, "Well, we'd like you to behave, thank you." I mean, really, if the orders are to give the kids time with their dad, then what's the point of having these orders if you can just flout them?
Don't forget our website, dadsontheair.net. That's www.dadsontheair.net. I'd like to thank our guests for this for today, James Adams from the seat of Wentworth, who's running there against the sitting member, Malcolm Turnbull. We had the Men to Boys program.
Yep, that was Damien and Paul, and then also Gary from Gamma.
And Mark Young from the Lone Fathers at Mackay as well.
And next week we'll be talking to a bloke who's just been through the family court system and who's been completely devastated and destroyed by that, just to show how the reforms hadn't occurred. We'll also have Tony Coe from the
Equal Parenting Council in the UK, it is.
And so hang around. It should be a good show next week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. www.dadsontheair.net.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask for